Ok? Second part of the lesson today is about the speech transmission index. Here we have a different standard, which is IEC, International Electrotechnical Committee, is not an ISO standard, is an IEC standard, and this is the number of the standard defined this technique. The standard was revised very recently, past year, 2011, and the modification was very important because they included my one method of measuring STI, which has been a significant advancement over the standard traditional method of measuring STI, and I am going to explain you this novel method of measuring STI, which is now officially inside the standard. Until past year, my method was considered yet a research method, but was not usable legally for making assessment or verification. Now the standard has been revised and we can make the measurement, as I will explain. So let's understand first the traditional method of measuring STI and how was the test signal employed for this kind of measurement. The STI method is based on the MTF concept. MTF stands for Modulation Transfer Function. I try to explain you what is the modulation transfer function. The test signal is pink noise, which amplitude is modulated sinusoidally in time. So instead of having a pink noise, which always make the same loudness, constant, we change with a sinusoidal law the intensity of your noise. So, okay? The sound comes and goes, comes and goes. It is amplitude modulated with a certain modulation frequency. So this modulation, becoming loud and weak, corresponds to the rate of phonemes of speech. If I speak very slowly, then the modulation frequency is 1 Hz or even less. If you think I speak very slowly, then the modulation frequency is faster, okay? So modulation frequency is not fixed. It is a range which must accommodate different language, different gender, male or female, different way of speaking, and so on. Generally speaking, modulation frequency range between 0.8 Hz up to 12 or 14 Hz. This is more or less the range in which we need to test with different modulation frequencies. This modulation is not applied to a wideband noise. It is applied to a noise which is filtered in one single octave band. This means that in practice, if this is the spectrum containing 7 octave band between 125 up to 8 kHz, we are giving energy only inside one of these octave band, and the energy inside this 1 octave band is modulated in amplitude versus time. Okay? For making a complete characterization of the modulation transfer function of a room, you need to repeat this kind of measurement with different carrier frequency, that is the frequency of the octave band being employed, and different modulation frequency. Usually we use the large F letter for marking the modulation frequency, and we use the small F for displaying the carrier frequency, the octave band being modulated. Let me try to change, for example, now the modulation frequency, we bring it to 1 Hz. So the carrier frequency is still 250. But now the modulation is low. Or you can make it much faster. 8 Hz. Okay. 4. Okay. Or you can change the carrier frequency. So you can repeat the test at a different carrier frequency. You see. In the end, what you are going to measure is a matrix of modulation transfer function values. I need to close this one. Okay. In practice, the signal being radiated through an acoustical signal system arrives to the receiving point with a reduced modulation depth. The reduction in modulation is due to two factors, noise and reverb. In practice, the reflection and the background noise both rise the floor. So, in the instant in which the source was not emitting any intensity, still you receive the reverb, the reflection, the tail of the previous energy, plus the background noise. The result is that instead of being modulated at 100% as the test signal was, you get at the output, at the receiver, a modulation percentage which is less than 100%. The ratio between the modulation at receiver and the modulation at the source is the modulation transfer function. So, modulation transfer function is simply a number less than one which tells you how much the modulation has been reduced. It can be 0.7 or 0.5 or 0.4 and so on. The lower value, the worst, will be the transmission capability of your channel, of your system. The system can be acoustical, but can be electrical. You can measure STI over a phone line. You can measure STI over a radio, pass-to-talk radio system. You can measure STI through various kind of complex transmission method, including VoIP codecs over the internet, and so on. Is a general method relating the output to the input of a system which is carrying voice. This is the concept. And the worse the modulation transfer function, the worse will be the voice intelligibility at the receiver. Well, although the theoretical original method was employing really this kind of test signal, and we are now going to try to generate this test signal to play it with the loudspeaker and to listen to it. That was the origin of the method. But in recent years, it was discovered that the value of MDF, of the modulation transfer function, as a function of the modulation frequency, large F, can be computed by the impulse response. I'm employing this formula, which again is due to our friend Mr. Schroeder, the same as the backward integration. German scientist Manfred Schroeder, he discovered this mathematical relationship between the modulation transfer function and the impulse response. So it is possible nowadays, instead of measuring the value of MTF through the test signal, it is possible to perform a standard impulse response measurement and to get MTF from this. But if the impulse response was noiseless, was without noise, you are taking into account the effect of reflection, but you are not taking into account the effect of background noise. Luckily enough, there is another formula which corrects the value of modulation transfer function obtained with the Schroeder formula, this one, multiplying it by this other factor, which depends on the signal-to-noise ratio, you get a corrected value of MDF, which contains the whole information of reverb and signal-to-noise ratio. Okay? So nowadays, with this revised modern technique, which since past year is now standard, it is allowed to first make a clean impulse response measurement with the sine sweep method, which removes completely the background noise from the impulse response. Then you separately measure signal and noise, making just normal recording of the signal with one guy speaking, for example, and of noise, no one is speaking. And you get signal and noise separately, and you combine all this information with this companion formula, and you get a correct estimation of modulation transfer function. In practice, you get an estimation which is much more robust and repeatable and accurate than what can be obtained with the original method with this modulated test signal, which takes very long because you need to repeat the measurement at every carrier frequency at a 10 or 12 modulation frequency. So it takes several minutes this measurement to be performed, and it's very delicate because if you make some disturbing noise during the measurement, you have to start all the sequence again, so it's not practical. Instead, the impulse response measurement is very fast, so the separate estimation of the two contributions, in theory you have to make three recordings instead of one, but in practice is much more practical and fast. And we are going to do this, so you will see. All those processing can be done with another plugin, another piece of software, which is still part of the Aurora plugin suite, which is the STI plugins. With this plugin, you have two modules, actually. This is the initial window of the plugin. But then you can make an octave band analysis for getting the octave band spectrum of signal and the octave band spectrum of background noise. Then you load your impulse response and you compute STI here. You compute the MTF matrix. This is the result of all this kind of processing. And you get a matrix in which this is the carrier frequency. The carrier frequency is the one we were calling small f. Okay? And instead here you have the modulation frequency, large f. If you are not using this impulse response method, you should repeat the measurement with as many test signals as the number of cells of this grid for every carrier frequency and for every modulation frequency. You should play your test signal at least 30 seconds long according to the standard. So making the measurement of the complete matrix will take half an hour probably. Okay? Because it is 1 minute every two cells. So it takes a lot of minutes to make the whole measurement of this matrix. Fourth is, when, before the impulse response method was invented, what was defined was these three values here, rasti, stitel, and stipal. Those are rapid version, because making the whole measurement was taking too long. So those three rapid versions were invented, which nowadays, since past year, are obsolete. So please throw them away. Now we are allowed to measure STI quickly and completely, the whole matrix, so there absolutely anymore no reason for measure these three quantities. I tell you very quickly what they are. Rasti did employ only two carrier frequency, 500 and 2 kHz, and only a reduced number of modulation frequency in these two frequency, one yes and one not, that was the rule. So for measuring rasti, you were measuring only at those modulation frequency, I think they were just 5 and or 6. Well, I don't remember exactly. And here at 2 kHz you are getting only this one. This was the first of the This one. One yes and one not. This and this and this and this. Okay? So with this rapid method, instead of measuring the whole matrix, you are measuring a reduced number of quantity, just a 2 carrier frequency, 500 Hz and 2 kHz, and one yes and one not of the modulation frequency. The other are different combination. I know that in STITEL you measure two modulation frequency at every carrier frequency. So you are measuring all the carrier frequency, but only two modulation frequency at each one. The STIPA I don't remember, but it is another mixture, so you are pruning the matrix, measuring only a reduced number of value along the matrix, instead of measuring the full matrix. Nowadays, we can measure the whole one. How you go from the MTF value contained in the matrix to the single number telling you what is the total STI? First thing, we make an octave band average. So, for every octave band, you measure a band STI, okay, which is more or less the average of the value of each column. Then you make a weighted average of these 7 numbers, and the weighting factor are different according to the fact that the talker was male or female. Using 2 different set of weighting, you get 2 different STI values, ST male and ST female. Female voice give more weight to high frequency, while male voice give more weight in this weighting average to low frequency. What does this mean? It means that if the band STI values are, as it is normal, increasing with frequency, because at high frequency you have less reverb and less background noise, so it's normal to see the band STI value increasing with frequency, the female voice adding more weight on high frequency gives you totally a higher STI, which means that it's easier to understand what a female is saying in the noise and in the reverb than if a male was speaking. That's the reason for which navigation voice on car or alert voice on the aircraft cockpit and so on often always almost always use a female voice for these warnings, because it is easier to understand the female voice than male voice in the noise or in the reverb or in both. There are exceptions to this, because there are particular environments where there is a lot of noise at high frequency, for example in the industry of wood, where they cut wood tables. Then there is those saws making high frequency noise. There the intelligibility is larger for male voice. So the general rule is that usually ST female is likely better, is likely larger than ST male, with the exception of environment where you have a lot of high frequency noise, where it can happen the opposite, but the software gives you both the value simultaneously. Okay? So those are the octave band values averaging every column, and this is the total single number STI value, which is the one often used in contracts. For example, when you have to design a school, the company or the municipality which want the school to be built and who is paying to the building company for constructing, for building the classrooms, specify in the contract that the STI value inside the classroom with the room empty, no audience, because the absorption of people usually improves the STI value. So no, usually the specification in the contract is for the empty room, and they tell you, for example, that the classroom must have an STI value larger than 0.7, which is quite good. If it is better than 0.7, intelligibility is almost perfect. Okay? So this is quite common. So the acoustical consultant is called at the end of the work of building the structure. You enter the room, you make your measurement, you make a report telling the constructor that he did meet the specification, so he is paid. If he doesn't meet the minimum STI value, he is not going to be paid completely. Usually there is a penalty of 10%, 15% if the STI value is not met. Currently, this usually occurs for private school in Italy. For public school, as this is not mandatory for law, they don't insert this clause in the contract. For private school, like the school very new which has been built here in front of the university, or the new other one which is actually being built now inside the campus, for this kind of school which are private, they have this kind of contract requiring the measurement of STI. For public school, unfortunately, this measurement is currently not mandatory in Italy. It is in France, it is in Germany, it is in England, but it is not in Italy. In Italy is only required to measure the reverberation time inside classroom, and there are limits for the maximum reverberation time, which is still quite good, but it makes nothing against noise. For example, in this school, which is just after the highway, after the tangenziale, is called the Salle School, Istituto La Salle, there they had to build a noise barrier like a mountain of ground along the highway for shielding the building, for keeping the noise low enough for meeting the specification, because the STI contain information both on noise and on reverb. In public Italian school we are only dealing with reverb, and no one cares with noise. No fan noise like those one, no outdoor noise like highway or road or train or aircraft. No one cares, because we don't have this kind of STI limit for Italian school. Well, for making a proper electroacoustical measurement of the impulse response to be employed for the FTI measurement, you should employ a special loudspeaker which is called a mouth simulator. It's a torso and head mannequin containing a loudspeaker inside the head with a lip ring of calibrated diameter, I think it should be 25 millimeter, the hole here, and this radiates sound with standardized directivity. We tested the directivity on a turntable, and this is the test signal for making the measurement containing pulses on the right channel, which make the turntable to advance at every pulse. This way you get a number of impulse response being measured while the turntable was rotating, and from this you can get an information on the directivity pattern of your mouth simulator. These are the limits in blue of the standard, and in black are the measured curves. Here, by comparison, you hear the directivity of a true human voice, and you see that the dummy head simulator, the mouth simulator, is quite close to the real directivity of a real human talker at every frequency required by the standard. Only if the directivity of the source is the real one, and only if the alignment of the source was the real one, then the FTI measurement is correct. If you use an omnidirectional source, you are not measuring correctly the FTI value, because it depends on the directivity of the talk. Okay? Also, the spectrum of this loudspeaker must be adjusted, because the human voice is not flat, is not pink. You don't have the same sound pressure level at every frequency. The human voice has this standardized spectrum. So with a proper equalization, you should feed your dummy head, your mouth simulator, with a pre-filtered pink noise, so that it radiates a spectrum which complies with this I2 recommendation and with a very well calibrated sound pressure level, which is 60 dBA, a weighted dB, at 1 meter from the lips. So both the power and the spectrum and the directivity of the sound source must be exactly the real one. If your loudspeaker is louder, it will win easily over the background noise and provide overestimated value of STI. If the spectrum is not the real one, the spectrum of STI will not be the real one, because you are changing the signal-to-noise ratio depending on the wrong spectrum of your voice. So having this kind of sound source which radiates the proper spectrum requires a quite significant effort. It's not so trivial to make the measurement. You must calibrate carefully your sound source. In our case, we did not use a commercial dummy head. We did build this ourselves, because we did not have enough money for building a new one. It's very expensive, a true mouth simulator. So we did build our one. The directivity was good, as you see here. Okay? But the spectrum was wrong. So we had to, this was the real spectrum, the measured spectrum. This was the target spectrum, the one required by the standard. So we did need to apply an equalization with this graphical equalizer to the signal feeding the artificial mouth, so that the output signal after filtering becomes exactly the prescribed spectrum. Okay? So you need an active digital equalization of the sound source for being sure that it radiates the proper sound pressure level with the proper spectrum. Only this way the STI measurements are correct. It's quite delicate. Here it was an example for comparing the traditional method of measuring STI with the modern method with the separate noiseless impulse response and the background noise measured apart. So we repeated the measurement in the traditional way, which is this one. You see that the impulse response here is not noiseless, is noisy. And this instead was the noiseless impulse response. And making the processing with the formula shown above, we show you the pink and the green results, which are exactly the same. This way, we did proof that the signal-to-noise correction applied to the modulation transfer function gives back the same value as the traditional method. And this was very important for convincing ISC to include our method in the new standard. So in practice, how this measurement is performed? We are going to do this now. There are four ingredients, so you need to make four recordings. At the end, you get four WAV files. Step one is calibration. That's easy. You insert the calibrator on the microphone and you record the calibration system, 94 dB. Step two, you record the background noise spectrum. You take away the calibrator from the microphone, no one is talking, just the noise of the room, and you record 30 seconds. Third signal, step three, signal. You play your test signal through the artificial mouth, or, very easily, with one guy talking, which is the same, actually, and you record at the listening position the strength of the signal when there is the voice. And step four, you make your sine sweep impulse response, which is noise-free because the ASS method kills completely the noise. At this point, you have four WAV files, and you process them with the STI plugin, one after the other, these four recordings. First one, calibration. You load the calibration file, you know it is 94 decibel. You click on the STI icon, the STI plugins open and you force the LQ to be equal to 94 decibel, then you press, you force the computation of the octave band. You get your octave band spectrum, and at 1 kHz, of course, the value is 94 decibel. Okay? Click OK, and step 1 is done. Step 2, this is your recording of the background noise. You see how weak is the background noise. Again, press on the STI button, you get your window of the STI plugin. Now you don't change the full scale value which has been calibrated in the previous step. So when you compute the octave band spectrum, you get a spectrum which is calibrated. These are true SPL values because at previous step one you did calibrate your microphone. And you get this, and this is the noise spectrum. So you click here where it is written store as noise. And the noise is being stored. Then you load the recording of the signal, of the human voice in this case. So this is the voice recording. Again, you invoke the STI plugin, you don't change the full scale value, if not signal and noise lose their relative calibration. You compute the octave band spectrum, you get the spectrum of the voice. You see how it is bell-shaped, as the standard suggests, and now the level is significantly larger, at least at medium frequency. That was my voice, so it is male voice. It doesn't have a lot of energy at high frequency, but at medium frequency, yes. And then you save this as signal plus noise. Plus noise, because during this signal recording, noise was also present. So this is not only the signal, this is signal plus the background noise. You press here and also the signal level is being stored. Step 4, final, you load your impulse response. You press the STI button, initial window, but now you are going to click here, compute STI. Click here and you get the STI result. These curves show you graphically the modulation transfer function at 4 carrier frequency and at all the modulation frequency here below. Now we are going to use it really so you can see better what's happening. But here you already see something very important. At very high frequency, you see the violet line is 8 kHz. Signal to noise ratio was very bad. Because there was this fan noise, and at high frequency, the noise was as loud as voice, more or less. So signal to noise ratio was poor at high frequency. And consequently, the 8 kHz band STI value is very low, 0.1. And in fact, you see this curve being very low. This chart gives you this information. When a curve is flat and low, is a problem of noise. When a curve starts close to 1, and fall down with modulation frequency, that's a problem of reverb. Okay? So when it is a problem of noise, the value go down the same at every modulation frequency. Because the noise doesn't change with modulation frequency. Instead, if it is a problem of reverb, the faster the modulation frequency, the more the effect of reverberation, filling up the gap between a maximum and the next maximum, because they are closer. So for a given reverb, it fills up the gap more and more as the modulation frequency increases. So a sloping down curve is a problem of reverb, a flat curve is a problem of noise. That is how we have to read this chart. Now we make it in reality. Okay. Here we have already our impulse response. We probably already have the calibration, because I don't have the calibration here, so let me load an old calibration file. Okay, several lessons ago we did record this calibration file, okay? So now, first thing, we calibrate the STI plugin, forcing the calibration value of 94 decibel, and we compute the octave band spectrum, and now at 1 kHz we see 94. It means that our microphone is calibrated. Step 2. We record the background noise. Okay. Silence, please. Okay. I made some click at the end, I take them away. And I save this as noise. Now, we invoke the STI plugin. We don't touch this value, which was carefully calibrated in the previous step 1. We compute the background noise spectrum, which is this one, and we store this as noise. Noise was quite loud, 51 decibel. This system is really bad. It should be at least 10 decibels less. Instead, it's very noisy. So now we know the noise and we store it. Now we record the voice. I'm just going to record my voice. So simply, the voice recording is a voice recording. Of course, I am not sure to be radiating exactly 60 decibels at 1 meter. You should check for keys. With a microphone, with a calibrated microphone. And if this is not true, you can change the gain of your recording matching the correct radiation with the standard mandate to be 60 decibels at 1 meter. But let me trust to my calibrated voice, okay? So we don't adjust this, okay? So this is our signal plus noise recording. You see the noise was there. Why I was not speaking, the noise is there. So this is signal plus noise. We invoke again the STI. The background noise level is here. We correctly entered this value in step 2. Now we compute the signal plus noise spectrum, which is louder, and we store it as signal plus noise. Store. What that does means that now both signal level and background noise level have been calibrated, have been recorded actually. You entered the correct value of background noise and of signal in these two columns. So the plugin is now ready for computing the modulation transfer function matrix. You measure your impulse response with the sine sweep, which we did already do 1 week ago. So this is the recording made 1 week ago of the impulse response of this room. And we compute STI by clicking here. Here we get those curves which are falling down, and this is due to reverb. You don't see that effect of flattening down the modulation transfer function due to the signal-to-noise effect. Why we don't see? Because the signal-to-noise correction flag was not checked. So now there is no noise in this measurement. The nice thing of this plugin is that you can easily see the effect of noise. Now, currently today, the situation is not bad. In the slides, there was the data of 1 year ago. Of course, we did not make this test in advance. So the slides were containing the data of the classroom of 1 year, which was the classroom next to this one. Today, the situation, the noise is not causing any significant effect, you see. In practice, noise and masking correction are changing the total value very slightly. 0.75 without correction, 0.73 with correction. So it's a situation nowadays where the background noise is not significantly changing what happened. But if the noise was louder, for example, if the noise was 10 dB louder, what happens? Compute again the octave band spectrum, store as noise, go back to the impulse response, compute STI, and see if now there is more effect. 0.75 without correction, 0.72. Not yet. Still the signal was louder than noise. Let me increase the noise by other 10 decibels. Effect, amplitude, amplifier, other 10 decibels. Oh, now there is a lot of noise. STI, store as noise. Okay. Go back to the impulse response, STI. Now the effect of noise is quite evident, particularly at low frequency. You see how removing the correction, the STI go up to 0.75, with the noise it fall down to 0.67, which is below the typical specification for classroom. So if the noise had been so loud, then it had been a problem for the acoustic intelligibility in this classroom. In reality, in this classroom, also thanks to the loudspeaker, which boosts my voice, the signal-to-noise ratio is not a problem. In this classroom, in practice, the loss of intelligibility is only due to reverb, because this room is not damped. There are no absorbing material here. So there is some loss of intelligibility. 0.75 is still a quite good value for a classroom, but the microphone was close to my voice. It had been measured with the microphone in the last row, the situation had not been so good. Okay. Well, we should repeat the measurement with the microphone in the last row of the classroom and see if it is still above 0.7. I think that thanks to the loudspeaker it should more or less meet the standard and be above 0.7. Actually, did not test in this room. Okay, that is the topic of the next hour. So I will answer in next hour, okay? Any other question? Okay, so let's stop here.